Vaginas are absolute magic, and Ollie is here to give them the respect they deserve. That means shame-free supplements made with clinically studied ingredients to keep your pH in check and your pleasure a priority. Put yourself on top. Go to Ollie.com today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
This episode is brought to you by Undeniably Dairy. Dairy farmers are more than farmers. They're climate caretakers. They see water as a precious resource. Most farmers recycle water up to four times, from chilling the milk to irrigating the crops. And some even use technology to turn manure into renewable energy. To learn more about what dairy farmers are doing to make their farms more sustainable, visit usdairy.com.
Hey guys, welcome. So today we have another potty training story. This time I'm interviewing my assistant, Sharon. And many of you may have interacted with her online. She answers my DMs and my emails, and I'm eternally grateful to her. And she is going to walk us through her potty training story with her son, Colton. But before we get started, I just want to tell you, yesterday, my son caught a cold from his friends, you know, kids being the germ bags that they are.
Still, even as a teenager, that's still true?
Yeah. Well, mostly because they're like so slovenly, I don't know. But yes, so yesterday I woke up with like a tickle in my throat, and it was one of those, I passed a 7-day cold cycle in one day. Every hour I got sicker. By the end of the day, I was crying. My eyes were slitty, almost like crusted, like pink eye. And I was crying. My throat hurt. And then I slept. I took some NyQuil. I slept and I woke up and I'm like, it's like the last day of a 7-day cold. So, but I do still have boogers. So if I have to blow my nose, I'll try to mute myself, or if I have to cough, but just to let you know. So Sharon, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us, you know, what you do. Do you work outside the home, or did you, you know, when Colton was potty training, and kind of lead us through your story?
Oh my gosh, I do much better with structured questions, but I'll do my best.
I'll ask you questions if you get stuck.
All right, so my story now is really different from when I potty trained Colton, because he's 5 now, and I potty trained him in another lifetime, it seems like. I work at home now, but at the time, it was pre-COVID, I was working out of the home about 45 minutes from home. And if I go into irrelevant stuff, I apologize, but it's just kind of the way I think.
Yeah. And I sometimes think it's not irrelevant, you know, or we may think it is, but sometimes it ties into what made it challenging or what made it easy or yeah.
Okay. So when he was born, I was working about 45 minutes away from home. We live in rural central Maine, and I worked about 45 minutes away. He was at the daycare right by work. And then right before, like when he was 18 months old, I moved him to a daycare a little bit closer, 30 minutes. I moved him because of the location, but it was a very, very, very busy daycare. There was like 5 or 6 rooms with 10 or 12 kids in each room. And the teachers were constantly rotating in and out of the rooms. In August of 18, which he would have been 15 months old, in my journal, my kid journal, which I'm really not very good about writing in anymore, I recorded, and I had to look this up. I literally have a second screen over here where I have pictures of the passages out of the journal because I could not remember. Like everything gets all glossy when you think back about it. You're like, oh, it's so easy. So he was 15 months old and I started noticing that he would bring a toy or a book to me and I would smell poop, but I wouldn't say anything. And then he would like keep the toy or the book and he would run over to the diaper table and he'd start fiddling with the safety latch on the door where the diapers were. And so I made the connection, like he knows he has poop in his diaper and he wants it changed. Like he's getting my attention and then he's leading me to the diaper table. So that was at 15 months old. And then 4 months later, I recorded in the journal. So that was like New Year's Eve of 2018. He was born in May of 2017. Okay, so we can do the math. And I didn't put the ages in my journal. I only put the months, like the date. So I have to do the math in my head. So he was like 1 year and 7 months old. And I recorded that he was starting to be able to tell me that he was about to poop. Like he would pat his butt and he would say boop. So that was when I started thinking about it. My coworkers had given me your book. Obviously, I wasn't your assistant at the time. This book was first, well, I don't know if that was the first owner or not, but one coworker trained her kid, passed it to the next coworker who trained her twins. Then Colton was born and they were like, oh, we've got a book for you. And they hung on to it until I needed it. And so they gave me the book. I was planning on training him right about, because he was born in May, right about when he turned two, because it would be summer and he could run around naked. And we live like on a farm. So I wasn't at all concerned about any of that. And I thought, oh, that'll make it really easy, right? Two is perfect. Well, in the middle of winter, he started doing this. And Jamie, you've known me a while now. I don't know if you know this part about me, but when I start to think about maybe doing something, like that's a commitment and it's going to happen.
Right, right, right. Which is probably why we get along so well. Because yeah, I understand that.
So 8 days later, he was 19 months and 3 weeks old. So just almost 20 months. I took a Monday off from work and we spent Saturday, Sunday, Monday potty training. And we locked ourselves in the kitchen. And John was home for the weekend. He works next door, but he's very busy. But he made the commitment with me and we took turns and we sat in the kitchen and we just had all the toys in the kitchen. The potty was in the kitchen. Like it was a thing, but it was winter and it's Maine. So any of your people who were like, I can't do it in winter, it's too cold. It was a tile floor in Maine and we made it work. The hardest part is the snow pants afterwards. But anyway, so it went pretty well, but in 3 days, it wasn't quite clicking enough that I felt like I could send him to this giant daycare, expect him to continue. Because the way it was set up is he was going, like I said, multiple rooms, right? He was actually in the room that was a little bit younger than him because he clicked with that teacher better. And they were not potty training. And there was like a baby gate and then part of another room and then the bathroom.
Yeah. Okay. So there was, yeah, there was a ways to go.
Yeah, exactly. They had to like leap over the baby gate and run across the room and get through the door into the bathroom. And it was like a public school style bathroom.
Can I stop you for a minute? Because I just kind of want to highlight a couple of things. So he started showing these subtle signs at 15 months. And you guys, this is really important. Because I say this all the time. People say, my kid's not ready. They're never ready. They're almost always, quote unquote, ready before you think it. Those subtle signs that Sharon picked up on, those happen naturally between like 15 months and 22 months. I think what happens is we often get so busy, we gloss over them. And so kudos to you for seeing it. But I also think a lot of parents, like, they maybe don't make the commitment you made, right? You're like, I'm thinking about this. I might as well just do it. I think what happens is people think it's going to get better. They're like, oh, well, he's already kind of indicating that he's got to poop. I'll just wait a bit. By next month, he'll be pooping on his own. And it doesn't always happen. Like if we don't attend to it, the child doesn't either. And then I also wanted to mention, yes, this is totally doable in the winter. It is easier in the summer because of snow pants. You know, and a funny story, when Oh Crap got picked up by Simon & Schuster, it was an ebook. And when you go from ebook to publishing, the book has to be dark for like 3 months, meaning it's not available to anybody. And there was actually a bidding war for my book with the five major publishing houses. And they all wanted the book to be dark on June, July, and August. And I was like, what? No, I don't care if you're making the money or if I'm making the money, but like, that's my retail Christmas. Like we kept people potty train in the summer and they were all like super clueless. And I was like, do you want a potty train in a bathing suit or in a snowsuit? And they were like, oh. But I also think, to your credit, like not only is it doable in Maine in the middle of winter, sometimes because it's such a pain in the butt to get a little one outside in the snow, sometimes the coziness of winter is really the best thing. And then the next thing I want to highlight is you knew he wasn't ready for that daycare setting. And I think that's something that parents overlook. Like the way he would have had to traverse through a baby gate and another room. The room he was in wasn't potty training yet. So I think it's so wise to like look ahead. So go ahead, continue.
Right. So in 3 days, he wasn't really getting it enough. So we re-diapered. And then 10 days later... he was still showing interest at home in the potty and he was still wearing diapers and he still was progressing. And I don't even think I had read, I skipped this part. I took your words literally. I read the first five chapters and then I put the book away. And that's actually what got me into trouble because I forgot the part where you said, read the chapters if you need them. And what I should have done was read the chapters to see if I needed them.
It's a good idea. I think, like, I tell people that when they get very overwhelmed, I'm like, just read up to chapter five and then look at the troubleshooting. But I want people to like skim.
Right. If I had read and I'm a speed reader, like, why did I not read these chapters? So 10 days later, we went for it again. I didn't write in the journal, but it must have been another 3 day weekend or something. And he did really, really well. So he had already been transitioning back and forth between the two rooms. And so when I said, you know, we're going for this, they put him in the room with the older kids. it was still really super overwhelming. And there was just so much activity there. The teachers weren't like able to really Hawkeye watch him. Anyway, so this daycare insisted originally that he had to be in underwear.
Okay.
Or a pull-up. And I said, no, we're not doing that. Why is that your rule? And they said, well, for hygiene. And I said, okay, more specifics, please. Do you care about the pee on the rug? And they said, no, because usually it just, you know, soaks into the clothes. And I said, okay, is it the poop you care about? And they said, yeah, we can't, like, it takes too long to clean up the poop. And I said, okay, I'm going to send him in pajama bottoms with cuffs. It will keep the poop in. And that's what we did. And they were like, okay. But then I made another mistake, which was, and I laugh now, but you do know me well enough to know that I sent them like a 2-page note, single-spaced typed. I doubt they read it, but it really didn't matter. He was definitely doing the pooping in the pants thing. And so after 4 months of getting poop balls back at the end of the day, rolled up in pajama pants, like literally they would send the poop home, which I actually think is pretty common. And I think it's a little passive aggressive, but I also don't blame them. You know, it's like, I was like, fine, whatever. The way the bathroom was set up, they let me bring in the little potty. It's like I had 4 little potties because we have a big house. Like they were everywhere. And then there was one at the school. They didn't have a little potty there before. So I brought this one in and then all the kids started using it. So I was like, whatever, it doesn't matter. They needed it. But they had like bathroom stalls, right? And with like regular sized toilets and they didn't have stools. So yeah, I just thought that was the weirdest thing. But anyway, so brought the little potty in and he did have the issue where he wouldn't pee if there was someone looking at him. And they would bring the kids in groups and there would be a teacher. So we sort of worked through that with a little bit of compromise about how they would bring him and that kind of thing. So I think the pee was going better than the poop and he was not very verbal. That was the other thing is I started him before he could say the ABCs and he was really only doing 1 and 2 word sentences, right? And we were doing baby sign language. So, you know, he knew more and please and, you know, the basics like that. I never even did teach him a signal for the bathroom that I remember. It took a while, like it always does, to self-initiate. So I think another challenge he had at daycare was just being able to get a teacher's attention to be able to tell him that he had to poop. So that was a challenge too. So anyway, that took longer than it really should have. So 4 months. And then an opening came up at a daycare that was about half the distance from home, which was awesome. And it was on a different commute route. So I was just really happy with the location. It was like one teacher in her home between 4 and 8 kids, depending on the day. And it was a lot cheaper. So I said, you know what? Timing's perfect. We're in the middle of potty training. This isn't going well. Let's move him. And we did. We had actually been on the waiting list to get into that daycare since before he was born.
Wow.
He was almost 2 at this point. And so he went there and it was like in her garage. It was just a little daycare and there was a bathroom. It was obviously it wasn't in her garage anymore. It was like, you know, it was a room with heat. It was beautiful. Little potty room right there. And it went really well. So like within 2 weeks, he was like completely pee trained, but he wasn't pooping at school. He would hold it until he got home. So I remember one day in particular, she called me and she said, he is so uncomfortable. He is out on the playground and he knows he has to poop, but he refuses to poop at school. So I actually went to his daycare. I brought him in the bathroom and I was like the poop doula. He sat on the potty and I just like hovered over him and he hugged me and I just coached the poop out, right? And I had to do that 2 or 3 different times, but it got a lot better. And we ended up moving him again last fall. I mean, he's 5 years old and he was in 5 daycares before he ever made it to kindergarten. I mean, it's a testament to how well he adjusts to things, but it was all just like the stage of our lives and his life that we were in, you know, it's just the transition needed to happen. So anyway, the fall of 2021, he went to this new daycare and he was in the daycare for that fall into when he started kindergarten just a couple of months ago. And it was there that he learned how to poop at school. He still doesn't love it. You know, so he was already 2021. He was 4 before he would poop away from home willingly. But now he's fine. No, he's not great at wiping.
They're not. They're not going to be great at wiping, I don't know, until they're grownups, like out of college, I think. But also, I think there's like, I can't remember the exact number. It's wicked high. It's like 87% of adults won't poop outside their home. So I think the expectation that our kids should just poop anywhere, like they might have in their diaper, but like a lot of people don't poop at home. So we kind of have to cut them
away from
home. Yeah, yeah. Like they, yeah, exactly. We have to give them that slack, you know? I think you're highlighting a lot of things that we talk about a lot and we find, right, we answer these questions from people in DMs. And
there's a reason I picked these things to highlight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because, you know, the more chaotic the environment, the harder it's going to be. The teachers just don't have the time. I would say sending the poop home is a little passive aggressive. But on the same hand, I'd be like, maybe it's just aggressive. Maybe it's not even that passive. It's like, here, you take your own poop home and deal with it. I like the solution. And you guys, we have our daycare course, right? Which is the daycare blueprint, because the situations and the things that can go wrong at daycare, there's such a myriad of them that can happen and they can be combinations. But we want to work through things like you brought the little potty in. That's amazing. Some schools won't let you. Some schools will. I want to highlight your 2-page note, single space. Usually not the best strategy to micromanage our daycare directors. And I've always said too, these people love your kid. They're great. You know, your kid might have a great time there, but they're human. And if they're going to be cleaning poop out of a kid all day, every day, they're going to get frustrated. And then we don't know, does that frustration come out on your child? Are they passive aggressive when they prompt your child? You know, so there's all these factors that we can't necessarily know in advance.
Right. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up too about accidents, I was looking through the journal even beyond that point. I made notes. He would have accidents when he would get sick, when the pandemic started, not right away. Even though he was still in daycare and we kept everything like as low key and unnoticeable as we could, like they weren't even wearing masks at the daycare just because of the ages, they didn't need to. But he was still affected by it. And I made a note that for like a week straight, he had at least one accident every day at daycare. He wasn't at home, but at daycare he was. And then night training, this was like right shortly before I became your assistant. I started listening to you on Patreon, which is a wonderful resource. Oh, so when he started having accidents, I just went back to prompting him more and he came out of it. But then night training, he was still in a crib and sleep sack at 3.
For shame. No, I'm just kidding.
And I think it was right around that time I started listening to you on Patreon and I made the realization like, okay, he's not a baby anymore. He's been potty trained since 20 months-ish before 2 years old and he's still in a crib and sleep sack. And that's because he was such a good sleeper. Like we sleep trained him at 4.5 months old, moved him to his own room and he just like slept. Like he's been an awesome sleeper his whole life. And I didn't want to mess with anything. And the idea of him being able to like roam the upstairs or roam the house, like, cause he's upstairs from us, like directly upstairs from our bedroom. So it was just a lot to think about. But then I made the decision and I didn't even tell John. I just like, cause I built the crib, right? I took the front of the crib off and it was like a whole day project. But when John got home, it was done and he's like, oh, we're doing this. Okay.
Ask permission. I mean, ask forgiveness, not permission, right?
Yeah, whatever. What's forgiveness either? I hadn't even told Colton what was happening. So he was like kind of floored by the whole thing and, you know, the freedom of it and everything, but it was fine. Like this is the day I discovered what a rule follower I have, which is kind of ironic because, you know, some of the other issues we're having right now, but I swear to God, it was 6 or 8 months at least. Like I didn't find the dates in the journal before he would get out of his bed without a parent there.
I don't know if that's rule follower though, because I talk about this a lot. I call it the magic force field. Pascal did it. I think if you can move them before they have the notion of climbing out, then they're like, okay, I call for somebody to come get me. And that's what I do. Pascal did the same thing. And I hear it from a lot of clients. When you wait till they're ready to climb out, you've activated their mischievous nature. That's when you get the kid who's like going to roam the house and everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He never tried to climb out, but he was wearing a sleep sack and the mattress was at this point on the floor. We took the mattress support. I mean, this is a tall kid. We had the mattress support out and literally the mattress was on the floor of the crib and then it was just the wall. So I was like, this is ridiculous. So that was when we took the front off and we put the support back in for the mattress. So yeah, that could be it. Like he had never climbed out of his crib, so he just didn't know that he could. So anyway, the solution I had for roaming the top of, you know, the upstairs was the doorknob cover on the inside of the door, which it's funny. There was one on the bathroom too, on the inside of the bathroom. I don't remember why we did that. But when we had guests over, they would use that bathroom and then we would get a phone call because I forgot the doorknob cover was on there and like they didn't know how to use it. And I was like, oh.
You're this creepy person who locks them in the bathroom. That's awesome.
Oops. But yeah, I mean, that combination worked really, really well. And I think he was at least 4 before we took the doorknob cover off. Actually, I should know that because, yeah, I did take notes. I actually put that in my notes because he was getting himself up out of bed at night to go pee in the big toilet. So that was it doesn't matter when. But anyway, that was when I took the potty out of his bedroom, was when I took the doorknob cover off. And he still didn't even go down the stairs. Like, there was no baby gate at the top of the stairs. And he would go to the bathroom and go back to his bedroom and go back to sleep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was really the key. And I did make a note in here, though. We got rid of the floor potties because he was going kind of half and half. He was using the toilet sometimes and also using the floor potty sometimes. And I just got tired of cleaning poop out of the floor potty is really all that happened. So January of 20, so however old he was then, Santa took the floor potties away.
I did not know Santa could take things away. That is good to know. Santa giveth and Santa taketh away.
Yeah, Santa took the potties away on Christmas overnight because he noticed that Colton had gotten to be such, and I know this isn't necessarily a great term, but had gotten to be such a big boy. He just didn't need them anymore. So Santa took them and gave them to other babies for Christmas.
Perfect. I love that. And you know what? Let's go over some of the things that that you've said, like, okay, you're going to hate me for this, or, you know, because I think it's really important that people understand my sort of quote unquote rules. We don't use the big boy language, particularly when there's a new sibling coming, because it's a lot of pressure. So you're the big boy, you're the big boy. They don't want to be the big boy. They want to be the baby. The baby's got the best life ever. Or if we're doing it in a subtle shaming way, like, well, you're supposed to be a big boy. Don't do that. You know, that's kind of shaming. But I think at four, to get rid of the floor potty is fine. Like, and for Santa to notice, like, hey, you're a big boy.
It was 3.5. I just did the math in my head. Roughly 3.5. Yeah.
So let's go back to the sleep sack, because I get a lot of flack for this. So I know kids love their sleep sack. I know sleep is precious. I always say sleep trumps potty training. And I know the crib keeps them in and secure. The biggest problem I have, like, I don't actually care when you potty train your kids, you guys. I really don't. I just want to let you know when it's harder, when it's easier, and what the risks you're looking at. So it's okay. Keep them in the sleep sack in the crib. But the people that I'm working with now are like, I need him to be independent. I need him to do this. I need him to do that. And he's acting like a baby. And I'm like, because the first thing you have to do in the morning is get him out of his own bed and get him out of his two traps. He's in two traps. And so I think if you want to keep them in a sleep sack till they're five, that's great, but you can't ask for independence in the same breath that you're stymieing that. You know what I mean? And I also think that the problem is that then if you wait till they're four or five, now you're running into maybe perhaps a chronic bedwetter, because the incidences of bedwetting go up by 50% if they haven't learned to control their bladder by three or four. And that's from the Pediatric Journal of Urology. That's not something I made up. So we definitely want to hit it in that sweet spot. And so that's why, and I know a lot of sleep experts now, I have sleep experts saying kids should be in a crib till they're four, which blows my mind because I have kids reading, like learning to read at four. And I'm going, why would we keep a kid? Once they figure out they can roam the house, they're going to roam the house, whether they're three, four, or five. And they're no more careful when they're four than when they were three. You know what I mean? So it's not like a four-year-old is going to be like, no, I won't go into the kitchen knives. I am mature. Like, they're not going to say that. They're going to get into whatever they can get into. So it's that doorknob, baby gate, lock the door, set yourself up for safety.
Right. So he moved into his toddler bed 3 years and 1 month. And then it wasn't until March of 2021, he had a dry pull up. He was peeing so much overnight that I put him in like Pampers 360s, which is a pull-up that doesn't have Velcro at the sides. So it's like a diaper, but you pull it on and off. So it absorbs more. And that wasn't doing the trick. I had to put a waterproof cloth diaper cover over the top of that because he just peed so much overnight. And so that's why I waited a little bit longer. So it was March of 21. So almost 4 years old. He had his first night with a dry diaper. So I night trained him like 2 or 3 days later, I think it was. Like, he had it 2 nights in a row, I think. And I just said, all right, we're done. So took off the diapers and I did the whole 10 and 2 thing. He only had a couple of accidents ever overnight. He was starting to get resistant to one pee or the other. I think it was the second one. He would resist and he wouldn't actually have any pee. Here's the fun part. He would resist. He wouldn't have pee. But part of that was because he had the little stiffy. Yeah. And I couldn't, like, I'm a woman. I don't know how you make those go away so that you can pee, right? So like, okay, all right, I guess we're not going to do this. So I'd put him back in bed. And then I ended up, because he was able to still stay dry, I just dropped that cold turkey the second wake. I didn't try to move it one way or the other. I just dropped it. So then we were just the 10 o'clock pee before bed thing. And I still have to do that sometimes. He'll kill me for this when he's like 16 years old, because this is going to be out on the internet. But he still sometimes will wet the bed at night. And then for the next night or two after that, I just go up at 10 o'clock and take him to the bathroom and, you know, we're done with it for a while. And it's only happened two or three times, but you never know what happened that day. They may have had a little more to drink. They may have had a little more sugar than usual.
Yeah.
You know, it just is what it is and you just move on.
Yeah. It's very fluid. I say that about night training. It's a while before you're really in the clear, because if you go to a barbecue and they're having more juice boxes, you know, and that kind of thing, you just got to be very fluid with it. It's a time change. Anytime they're like off of their schedule. And I bet at the beginning, I bet he was filling that pull up, because kids in daycare tend to not drink, and daycare tends to have like more formal rules. Like, we're going to sit down, have some water in a Dixie cup. So they get home, they've been so busy, and then they drink so much when they get home. So their night diapers are full. I did want to address the morning hard on. By the way, he won't be mortified about this being on the internet, because no 16-year-old would be caught dead listening to my podcast. So like, we don't have to worry about that. Because I remember years ago, a client came to me with this, like, what do I do about the little morning hard on? And I was like, I don't know, I don't have a penis. So I asked Pascal, he was like six at the time. I was like, hey, do you ever wake up and your penis is hard? And he goes, oh yeah. You know? And I said, okay, well, how do you pee? Mommy, you can't pee. That's going to hurt. I said, okay, well, what do you do? And he said, well, you roll it out. And I was like, hey, boy, what? You roll it out? He said, yeah, talk to me tomorrow. I'll show you. All right, here we go. So sure enough, he shows me. And because it's not an actual sexual hard-on, it's just like this morning blood rush. He literally could roll it, like roll it and sort of deflate it. And I was like, oh, and he said, yeah, okay, now I can pee. And so I've told this to clients since the last 10 years, and people are like, oh my God, you can roll it out. So anyway, just wanted to share that with you. Speaking of getting killed by your 16-year-old. Yeah, that's great. And like, you know, you don't necessarily, like, I appreciate that you waited till he was dry because he was so soaked. But, you know, my rule of thumb is like, you have to be on guard at 36 months. You just kind of do. After that, you really want to start looking at like, are we getting closer? But the definite thing, when people say, how do I know if they're ready? I say, if they do stay dry, you don't have to wait for it. But if they stay dry for a couple of nights, you got to get on it, you know, because otherwise, I've seen parents mess this up where like, the kid is three, they start staying dry for like 6 months, and the parents are so nervous, they keep the pull-up on them, and the kid goes back to wetting the pull-up. And I'm like, oh no, you just let yourself take a massive backward step. So yeah.
Right. But it was definitely something that once we started, I didn't regret at all. And I think I was the one that was doing all the wake-ups too, because I was the one that was, you know, nursing all night too before that. So it's just kind of like how it is. And I think one other reason we may have waited a little bit longer is just because that whole period was like pandemic period.
Yeah.
That's how everything just got a little screwed up during that.
Absolutely. And like you said, the pandemic, even the kids in the best circumstances, there's no way any of us could have had a good poker face. There's no way any, you know, yeah. Clients would tell me like, oh, they don't know. They don't know anything's wrong. And I'm like, well, you're all home. You're not going to the playground and they get to watch Frozen all day long. I'm pretty sure they know something's up. Like, this wasn't how you were operating before. So yeah.
And in our case, I was still going to work. He was still going to daycare. And we really don't go anywhere anyway. I don't take him in stores anyway, because we live so remotely. But it was still, I even put in my notes, I said, he's acting up because he can tell something's different and something's wrong. And that just goes to show that no matter how subtle you think it is, it's been there. So a little plug for the pandemic toddlers course.
Well, there's that frequency. Like, I wish we could see how the planet looked. Like, I think there was this global anxiety of like, you know, and they're so sensitive to nonverbal communication.
Well, even like if you have the radio on or something, you know, talking about case counts and death, and you just can't help it. It's there.
Yep, exactly. Awesome. Did you have anything else to add?
Not that I can really recall. If we're just talking about potty training stuff.
You had told me when you were like, hey, interview me. Like you said, you didn't even know I had all these resources.
Oh yeah, I had no idea. This was all I had. And like I said, it took me a long time to remember that there were other chapters in the book. I think I didn't even read the whole book until I started working for you.
Yeah. I know. Well, you know what too? It's so funny because I hardly ever finish a book to the very end, you know? And so if I could write the book again, I would reformat some of the information to like front load it, because like the frequently asked questions are at the end, and we get tons of those on Instagram. Like so much that I'll be like page 286, page 286, page 286. But people, who gets to page 286 of a 300 page book? Nobody, you know, like we're parents.
Well, I mean, it is a fun read. I will give you that. But yeah, so Yeah, I had no idea. I wasn't on Instagram. Actually, I think I joined because I needed practice to deal with your Instagram. So I wouldn't have thought to look for you there.
I probably wasn't on Instagram when you potty trained Colton. I resisted the internet. I thought these computers in 1996 were just fads. I could then when there was internet, then I resisted Facebook, then I resisted Instagram. Right now I'm resisting TikTok.
Oh, you keep resisting that one.
I'm always behind the curve. I just started Instagram like fairly recently, given how long I've been doing potty training. So.
Yeah, well, I'm 47 with a five-year-old. I refused to ever explore Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok, any of those things that have come along. I'm like, I am a Facebook diehard. That is all where my baby pictures are, where Colton's baby pictures are. I mean, if that ever disappears, I think I'll just be done. I can't stand it.
I have a tour on New Year's Day. So, you know, I've been on Facebook. I went on Facebook last January 1st. And so I still have to go back and retrieve the pictures. So it's like, oh, when am I going to do that? And I was like, okay, I'll do that on New Year's Day. I'll go grab those pictures and be done.
Well, you can download them pretty easily. I will say that there is a lot of bastardized information out there, like from people who used your book, but then now they're giving advice to other people. And I somehow managed to stumble on those people, and not all the advice was really, I don't want to say accurate, but helpful, I guess, is maybe the word I would use. So I would just, you know, caution people to look out for that.
Yeah, I would too. And more cropping up. We actually just found this woman who has a whole series on YouTube, and it's great. I mean, she actually says, buy the book. This is what I changed, but she uses my full name. She uses my branding. It looks just like it's information from me. And so Simon & Schuster like tries to keep up with everything, but they can't. Yeah. So it's like, just come to the source, right? Like we're here. We answer DMs.
Which is surprising and shocking. I didn't even look for your website. It never occurred to me to look for a website because it would never occur to me to email someone who was, you know, this famous author or anything.
Right. But we have blog posts and YouTube videos and now this podcast.
I had no idea that any of that was even there. So yeah, people have got it golden now, so to speak, golden.
All right, Taryn, well, thank you for sharing your story. I totally appreciate it.
Of course. No problem. Anytime. I hope it was helpful for some people.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. Like that's the whole point of like getting these interviews now. It's just like, let's just share because again, like, and I don't get mad at people. Like we all do what we have to do. Like some people are like, oh, don't get mad at me. I used an M&M. And I'm like, I'm not mad if it went good for you. Like I'm not here to fix what's not broke.
Oh, funny story. I asked my mother, because she had five kids. She's 70 something now, but she had her last kid at 44 adopted. So I asked her, because it wasn't, you know, that long ago, maybe she'd remember. And I said, what did you do to potty train your kids? And she's like, well, I have no memory of potty training you and my older brother and sister. But she said, for my little brother, she said, if you can be dry all day, I'll get you a chocolate chip cookie at the end of the day. And she swears that's what worked for them. He was two, and you promised him a chocolate chip cookie at the end of the day if he didn't pee his pants, and that worked. Okay.
Well, maybe they were a little bit rarer then. You know, I know we never had cookies the way kids have cookies today. You know, I say this all the time. Potty training pains are like labor pains. Like the longer you go, the more you forget. Because I hear these miraculous stories and I'm like, really? Because I work with thousands of kids and I'm like, I never really heard this. And granted, I tend to see the trouble cases, but I don't know. You know, I think it just glosses over. And believe it or not, you guys, you are going to forget about potty training at some point in time.
I literally had to research my own kid.
Yeah. And I also think like part of my job too, I wanted to say is like, let's say with the M&Ms or why I don't work with kids over four. It's like, I don't care when you potty train. I don't care how you do it. I know that these are practices now. The problem is that you guys only have like your mom group. You only have a small set. You don't see the numbers that I see. And the kids like potty training after 3 and a half is a freaking nightmare. I don't care. Like it's no skin off my teeth if you wait till your kid's seven. But it's a nightmare the longer you go. And the same thing with like, yeah, M&Ms work for a good amount of kids, but the ones that it doesn't work for, it's an epic disaster that lands you in therapy, like the whole family. And so to me, it's like, is it worth the risk? Because I don't want that epic disaster.
Do you mind if I take segue real quick?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
We're working with a behavioral consultant right now who had me do an assessment, a temperament assessment on Colton, because he's struggling a little bit socially at school, at kindergarten. He came out as it's the DISC model, and he came out as an ID. And I can't tell you what the letters stand for, but basically he's a defiant extrovert is what it translates to. apparently at schools, they had these positive behavior and intervention systems, and they designed these like sticker charts or behavioral tracking things around, basically around these kids, because they wouldn't do it for the kids that are, you know, quietly making sure everything is lined up on the table and that all the art supplies get put away. Like, that's not who they make these charts for. And he does not care about whether he gets all of his little numbers or whatever. Like, she had, the first one she did was like the six segments of the day, 0, 1, or 2. And then if he would add up all the numbers and got a certain score, he'd get a prize at the end of the day. He was happy when he got prizes, but it never affected his behavior throughout the day. It was just an accident whether he got the prize or not. And so that's what, like, we hear all the time from your clients and your readers about strong-willed children and defiant children. And what Meg said to me that resonated the most was they make these charts for the strong-willed, defiant children. The strong-willed, defiant children don't care about the prize. They don't care about the reward. So, I mean, that relates back to the potty training.
Well, you know, it reminds me of the amount of clients I work with, and, you know, we'll go through all that stuff and they'll say, well, the rewards are working like sometimes. And I'm like, well, that's like being pregnant sometimes. Like, no, you're either they're working or not. And I was like, at this point, pretty much your kid is deciding, do I want the candy? No, not that important to me. I'll just poop my pants. Never mind. It's just the kid learns to manipulate it. I'll also never forget the kid I had that learned to meter out his poop. 40 little nuggets because he got 2 M&Ms per poop. And when this kid the next day learned how to squeeze out little baby poops to get 88 M&Ms, I was like, all right, very good. This kid's game in the system. Let's try something else.
That's pretty rich.
All right, awesome, you guys. We will see you next time. As always, I appreciate you, and I hope you have a great day and rock on. Thanks, Sharon.
And it was nice to meet you all. Bye.
Bye.